Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary specialty and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information and to learn more about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state of Maryland, 1-800-492-5538. That's 1-800-492-5538. You can also go to steinershow.org, click on their banner, and all the information about the work they do at the University of Maryland Medical Center is right there. We are joined right now with my dear friend and co-host on Mondays, Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here every Friday on WEA from 5 to 7 p.m. Anthony, you there?
I'm here, Mark. Wish I was in the studio with you.
You'll be there, and he'll be here when you get here.
I'll be there.
Baltimore traffic. Joining us as well, we have Deneen Borelli, fellow with Project 21, a network of African-American conservatives, which is an initiative of the National Center for Public Policy Research, a national public policy group based in Washington, D.C. Deneen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And Sarah Anderson is with us. She's director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, co-author of the report, America Is Not Broke, How to Pay for the Crisis While Making the Country More Equitable, Green, and Secure. And Sarah, great to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
And the number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also log on to the Facebook page, Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, and put your thoughts and ideas there as well. We'll go to the page and see what you've been writing in as well on all of this. As we know that the super committee, along partisan lines, failed to come up with any solutions for America, much to the chagrin of most people in America who want to see something happen. And then this morning, I got in the email this report, America Is Not Broke, by the Institute for Policy Studies. And we thought that would be an interesting way to kind of begin to talk about this. We were first going to just look at Medicare, but it's broader than Medicare, which we may get to in the course of this conversation as well. Sarah, let me just ask you if you would to kind of lay out for a minute the thesis in America Is Not Broke, because it really is counterintuitive and antithetical to what most people are reading in the major press.
Yeah, this whole debate around what to do about our deficit and the super committee and all has really been dominated by this idea that we need to focus on slashing spending, that we're a broke as a nation. We have no choice but to really take out a machete and just go after social programs. And what our report does is it comes at this from a totally different perspective and just reminds people that we're actually a really rich country. The problem is that we have been spending too much money on the military and wars, and we haven't been making Wall Street and the wealthy pay their fair share of the tax burden. These are the main reasons we've gotten into this deficit crisis. And so we pulled together a team at IPS. We're a multi-issue think tank, and we have people who work on military budgeting and sustainable energy issues and wealth and inequality issues, and put together a list of 24 different kinds of tax increases and spending cuts in some cases, and came up with a list of a list that amounts to about $824 billion a year, so about seven times what the super committee was tasked with identifying. And not only are these all ways that we could raise a lot of money, but we argue they actually would make us a stronger country by making us more equitable, more green, so having a cleaner environment, and also more secure.
And Anthony, please, as you hear this conversation go on until you get into the studio, please just jump in. I'll hear your voice and let you jump right in with your thoughts and questions, okay?
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Deneen Borelli, let me get your sense of what you thought occurred today with the super committee before we dive into some of the heart of what this report says. We can go back and forth about the ideas in it.
Well, first of all, I think the whole idea of a super committee was a super cop-out. And I find it a cowardly way for our elected representatives to avoid accountability. Because, first of all, their fundamental role is to pass a budget. 3 months have been wasted with the super committee, and unfortunately, they've gotten nowhere, which means the American people have gotten nowhere.
That's really interesting. Sarah, I just for a quick minute, what do you think about that? Is that the idea that the super committee being just a cop-out and just avoiding the issue?
Well, I have to say, it was an ugly day in Washington. I think we can all agree on that. Just seeing our elected officials break down into this kind of dysfunctionality and finger-pointing and blame-shifting, I mean, that's not what anybody wants to see happen with the people we elect to serve us here in Washington. And so I'm just as disappointed, I think, as Deneen is on what came out of this. You know, what do I think should have happened? I mean, here's where I think we probably have very different views. I think that the Democrats should have put forward a much bolder, coherent, long-term vision for our country. They should have gone out and really sold it to the public. And I think they could have done that. A lot of opinion polls are showing that Americans do support raising taxes on the wealthy and so forth. And so with a big effort to really build popular force, instead of getting so bogged down in the horse trading here in Washington, I think they could have changed the political dynamic in here, and we would have seen some more responsible compromising. But that didn't happen, obviously. Everything completely fell apart. I think that having no deal is probably better than having the Democrats roll over and accept really drastic cuts to social programs in the middle of an unemployment crisis. So, you know, no deal's better than a bad deal, but it's certainly not the kind of, you know, behavior and level of work that we would expect to see here in Washington.
Deneen?
Well, again, I the responsibility falls on our elected representatives. It's been over 900 days since a budget was actually passed in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I find it totally outrageous that we have more and more spending going on and our elected representatives can't even pass a budget. So, you know, what are we paying them for? Why are they there? Why are they in these positions if they're not going to perform their basic duty? I mean, listen, if you work in an office building in executive capacity and you're not performing your fundamental role, your basic duty, you are shown the door. That goes in any, you know, company or corporation or business across the country. That is the way it goes. If you don't perform your basic duty, if you don't have something to put on the table, you don't show what you are about and that you can make decisions and provide action when necessary, you are shown the door. That is a normal course of business. And unfortunately, too many politicians are getting away with not doing their job, and the American people are tired of it.
So, and Anthony McCarthy just got in through traffic jam. Good to have you in the studio here with us, brother.
I would have gone out and walked, Mark, but I have this cheap suit on, and so I didn't. And it's raining really hard. But I've been listening to the conversation,
yes.
And I'm all day. I've just been hoping against all odds that the message would not be that they could not do anything. And I think that great opportunities were missed on both sides in this process. But I am most disappointed, if I have to be truthful, in the Democrats and the leadership of the president. I think if we wanted to make something happen, this president, the Democrats who still have this very slim majority in the Senate, could have really pushed some initiatives, pushed some ideas out there that would have forced the Republicans' hands. And we would have began the process, maybe not at a level that we wanted or anticipated with this super committee, but we would have been able to begin to move this process forward. And we would not be here wringing our hands, absolutely disappointed in missed opportunities by the leadership that we sent to Washington.
So let me ask you this question, Sarah Anderson. Your report, I mean, you come up with three basic areas: revenues that advance more equitable society, expenditure cuts that would make the United States and the world more secure, and revenue increases and subsidy cuts that would create a cleaner environment. Many of these being, again, not what you see argued in the mainstream press at all. So I want you to kind of lay out this. I really want to have our other guest, Deneen Borelli, join in and kind of wrestle with some of the stuff we're out there with maybe a very different opinion, and have Anthony weigh in with his astute questions on this. But talk a bit about what your idea is, starting with the revenues that advance more equitable society. What you're talking about is raising $375 billion in tax in new revenues for this country, which is something that people kind of don't put on the table because that whole notion is like, oh, my God, no, we can't raise that kind of money in America. But talk about what you mean by that.
Tax tax has become a dirty word in America.
Dirty word.
It just shouldn't be that way. I mean, again, we have to remind people we have abundant resources in this country, and we should see the current crisis as an opportunity to harness those resources in ways that will make us stronger. And we have seen this incredible rise in inequality in this country that I would argue is very disturbing on many levels, including a real threat to our democracy, to have so much of our wealth concentrated in the hands of so few, and seeing the middle class shrinking. And so in our report, we go beyond even just talking about rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. We also think that we should have higher tax brackets for people who are really the ultra-rich, the people who are making mega millions of dollars a year. We also talk about putting a very small tax on Wall Street speculation, so a small tax on each trade of stocks and bonds and so forth, as a way to both generate a lot of money but also discourage the kind of high-risk, high-frequency trading that has no real social value and can undermine the stability of markets. So these are just some of the ways that we think we can use the pressure of this crisis to kind of reorient our resources in ways that would be making our country stronger for the future.
Yeah, I agree with Sarah to the effect where she says we have a wealth of resources, natural resources here in our country, fossil fuels, that's coal, oil, and natural gas. You know, that industry provides thousands of jobs across the country, and it's a ripple effect because it's not just the industry, but it's also the local economy. So it seems to me it makes absolutely no sense that President Obama is blocking the pipeline project coming from Canada down through our country into Texas. It will be over 20,000 jobs provided, and this is real shovel-ready because it's being paid for by private funds. And it will reduce our energy costs because we're putting more energy online, and it will provide tax revenue for the government. So this will be a win-win for our country, for us to develop more of our natural resources. People will be employed, and we would have less to pay for our energy needs, which would mean more money in the pockets of hardworking Americans.
Sarah?
Well, this is where I think we really need a long-term vision, because I think while that proposed pipeline would create some immediate-term jobs, the effects of it on the environment could be devastating. And so if we want to really build our economy to be strong for the long term, we should be looking at putting federal funds into supporting clean energy alternatives. Right now, we already put tens of billions of dollars every year supporting fossil fuels industries. They are already highly profitable. We don't need to be continuing this dependence on those kinds of fuel sources, and especially depending on foreign fuel sources. So here's where, again, I think that we have a fundamental difference here. I think that we should be using our tax and spending policies to be encouraging clean alternative energies to make us strong down the road, instead of subsidizing the old fossil fuel industries that are contributing to climate change and not making us strong for the future.
And are you referring to Solyndra? Because that worked out well.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to defend that, but I don't oppose the general idea of supporting alternative energy. Look at what China's doing. Look what India's doing. They are way ahead of the U.S. right now on developing these kinds of forms of energy that are going to make their economies much more competitive down the road.
Well, what we've witnessed right lately is that $90 billion have gone into the renewable energy industry, and what we know is that wind and solar can't stand on its own. What we do know is that fossil fuels are reliable, they're cheap, and they're plentiful, and Americans can afford them right now. But when you're injecting clean energy sources of energy, it's much more expensive, and it's not as reliable as fossil fuels. And if you also look at the fact that GE, for example, Jeff Immelt, the CEO of GE, is one of Obama's jobs panel advisors. Well, he runs a company that relies on government crushing the fossil fuel industry. In order for him to sell his products, he needs our tax dollars to prop up his products. And you know what? It's really harmful for all Americans because it's a waste of our tax dollars.
But if these polluting industries and these fossil fuel industries had to pay the full cost of all the environmental harm that they do, they would have much bigger incentives to adopt better green technologies and shift away from our dependence on these fossil fuels. So, yeah, they're artificially cheap now because we don't pay the full cost of our dependence on oil. So if we're ever going to get away from that dependence, we're going to have to develop these industries. And we're seeing other countries do this now, using their taxpayer dollars to invest in those industries and become much more competitive than the U.S. is in them right now. So I think we just need to have a longer-term vision on that.
Anthony?
I want to ask a very quick question. I'll start with Deneen. I'm very curious. All day I've been listening to talk radio. I've been trying to figure out what direction we can go from here. There has to be something we can do to pick up these pieces and move this ball further along. And a lot of people have been calling in and writing in, emailing and talking about they would like to see Congress refocused on generating jobs. The way we did when we reached in and saved the automotive industry, the way we did when we gave money to Wall Street to protect those businesses and allow jobs to be created, and that we will in the long term be able to manage the economic, because there will be economic repercussions of just spending like that. But we got to get the economy going. And that's what the Congress has failed to do and the president has failed to do. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, it sounds reckless on the surface, but a lot of people say, let's get America working and we can begin the process of re-energizing this economy.
You know, we should get America working because there are over 46 million Americans on food stamps, 9% unemployment. We don't know what it's going to be for the month of November when the report comes out. But, you know, what we really need to do is get government out of the way. You know, government propping up industries, bailing out industries, it's just not the answer. And, you know, what we're using our tax dollars with the stimulus, for example. You know, it was marketed as keeping unemployment at or below 8%. And we all know that didn't work, and it still isn't working. So, you know, for tax dollars to be used to bail out industries, bail out companies, I think it's the wrong approach. What we really need is regulatory reform so that the barriers of entry are knocked down and people can open up businesses, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're a multinational corporation. We need regulatory reform. That is like first and foremost, because when you have regulations, businesses and companies are spending money to keep up with these regulations, and in effect, that money could be used for jobs, to hire people. It could be used for expansion purposes. So I think government really needs to get out of the way.
Sarah, go ahead and respond.
Then we'll open the phones. That. If you look at surveys of owners of small businesses where they're asked, you know, what are the biggest problems that you face, they don't tend to talk about too much regulation or too much taxes. What they're talking about right now is they don't have enough customers. They don't have the demand for their products. And so, you know, you can change your regulations all you want. If Americans aren't working and getting paychecks to pay for services and products that these businesses are making, we're still going to be in a crisis. So I agree with the idea that while it might seem counterintuitive, we need to keep the spending going until we get America working back again. Otherwise, we could get in this vicious cycle where we try to slash spending to reduce the deficit, but in the end, it just gets bigger because we're people aren't working, and so their income isn't being taxed and generating revenue.
Let me open the phone to you and have our listeners join in this conversation. You just heard Sarah Anderson, who's director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, co-author of the report, America is Not Broke, How to Pay for the Crisis While Making the Country More Equitable, Green, and Secure. Deneen Borelli, a fellow with Project 21, a network of African-American conservatives, which is an initiative of the National Center for Public Policy Research, a national public policy group based in Washington, D.C. And, of course, here this Monday with Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday on WEA from 5 to 7 p.m. in our shared time slot, and also a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Russ, on the east side, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your guests.
Greetings, Russ. Welcome.
Hi, Russ.
Mark, I don't normally disagree with Brother Anthony, but today I must very respectfully and gently do so, along with the other guests. In the first place, big business has over $1 trillion in cash that they're sitting on. That begs the question, why are they not investing that money as they could and should? It would go a long way to help this economy, but they don't want to help this president because they think that by putting him in this economic box, that they'll win the presidency next year, the Senate back, and they'll be able to write their own ticket. The reason I really called is to talk about taxes. In 1960, Mark, I know you and I are old enough to remember the name of Cassius Marcellus Clay won the gold medal in heavyweight boxing at the Olympics.
At the Olympics, right.
He turned pro. A couple years later, fighting under the name of Muhammad Ali, made millions of dollars. He was asked by Howard Cosell, "Champ, why are you fighting so much when you're beating up all these dumb bums and making all this money?" What he told Howard was this, and this is what got me interested in taxes as a 13-year-old. He was paying 96% after the first $5 million in purses in taxes to the federal government. Think about that. That was 1962-63. Today, there's nobody paying over 35%, and they're still screaming for tax relief. I mean, what more can you give them with the condition of the country? But more importantly, Brother Anthony, it doesn't matter what ideas the president puts forth. The reason it does not matter is because all the Republicans who run for national office have to kowtow to Mr. Grover Norquist and sign a pledge to not raise taxes. If they violate that pledge, Mr. Norquist, and nobody knows where he gets his money from, he doesn't have to report to anybody, runs candidates against him and makes them one-term people or whatever point that they go against what he's telling. It's a pledge, and if they violate it, they pay. So you're not going to – the Republicans are going to remain intransigent because they want to keep their jobs and not have to run against the forces that Grover Norquist can bring against them. I hope I make some sense and kind of direct the conversation in a different direction.
Thank you so much, Russ.
No, I
appreciate
it, Mark.
We appreciate it.
Russ, I wasn't beating up on the president. I was just pointing out I believe that he could – this president has made a hallmark of saying to progressives and liberals, I'm reaching across the aisle. I'm going to work with conservatives and the Republicans to see if we can get an agenda moving this country forward. The interesting thing about Grover Norquist and others, because we do know where he's getting his money. I mean, he doesn't have to publish where he's getting his money, but we know who's funding him. The interesting thing is I believe that this super committee and really this ongoing conversation about how we're going to save America from this economic disaster we've been set up to fail. When the Republicans come to the table and saying there will be no revenue enhancements, i.e. taxes, and the Democrats come to the table saying we are not moving forward unless we agree to enhancements, then I'm not sure what the exercise was for. But I know when we went through the budgeting process, Deneen and Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, this super committee was as close to a compromise as we could get. I mean, the president and the Speaker Boehner, they had to move it forward. And this was the only solution at that time. Well, there were others, but this was the agreed upon solution. I think they were doomed from the beginning.
Sarah, go ahead.
Well, I think one thing we should just remind your listeners about is because they failed, now we will face these automatic cuts.
Almost definitely.
What they often refer to in the paper as sequestration. So these automatic cuts that are going to be triggered, they won't start until January 2013, but it is supposed to be the $1.2 trillion over 10 years that the super committee was tasked with coming up with, because they couldn't come up with their own plan. Now this automatic plan is supposed to go into effect. And half of those cuts are supposed to be on military spending, which in my mind would be a positive thing. But if you look into the details, there are lots of questions about whether these cuts would just come off of the planned increases, and so the Pentagon budget will still get bigger, but maybe not grow as fast as it otherwise would have, and so forth. But there will be cuts under this law unless they find a way to get around it. And, of course, they're already trying to figure that out. But they would, I think, face a presidential veto probably if they tried to take these military spending cuts out of this automatic process. And so while it's certainly not ideal that they couldn't come up with any kind of agreed-upon plan, there is this backup mechanism that is supposed to put these cuts in place.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, our Senate hasn't passed a budget in over 900 days. So clearly they're not performing their basic duty. But just to touch on the caller that called in real quick when he mentioned taxes, I think something that should be implemented is a flat tax. This way everyone pays the same amount, something like 15, 17%. Those that are currently being reported on for everyone to pay a flat tax.
And it's not the same amount, though, Deneen. They would be paying the same percentage.
The same percentage amount. This way everyone would have skin in the game because, as we all know, over something like 50% of Americans don't pay federal taxes. So we need a major overhaul with our tax structure because there are some loopholes that are taking place. Corporations are taking advantage of these tax loopholes. General Electric, for example, they've been reported to not have paid taxes. So really they're leeching off taxpayers by getting billions of dollars of our tax money.
Well, I'm absolutely up for having corporations pay their actual tax rates, but I would go in the opposite direction of a flat tax and try to return more to the days when we had much more progressive tax rates in these countries. The caller talked about how Muhammad Ali paid 96%. That's probably not far off. In the Eisenhower, I remember reading that top marginal tax rate was 91%. I'm not saying go back to that level on the ultra-rich, but we had much higher tax rates on the extremely wealthy during the decades of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Those were the decades when we really built the middle class in this country. And it was thanks a lot to progressive taxation, government investment in infrastructure, housing, education. We need to apply some of the lessons from those decades to the current situation when we have such extreme levels of inequality coming off of a couple of decades of much lower tax rates on the rich.
So we have to take a brief break here and come right back. I know Lance, Mac, and Bernard are three callers waiting to get on. We're going to get right to Lance as we come back. And then Mac and Bernard, please hold on. We'll get to your questions. Now, I know we originally asked our guests to stay till 6:30, Sarah Anderson and Deneen Borelli. I don't know if either one of you can stay for a bit longer. We'd love to have you stay if you can.
I got 5 minutes for you.
40.
Pardon?
I can only stay on till 6:40.
Okay, that was Sarah, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, we'll come
Deneen
right back.
Deneen said she could give us 5 minutes.
So we'll come right back and get right back to two of you and to our listeners. 410-319-8888. And stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We are here with Deneen Borelli, fellow with Project 21, a network of African-American conservatives, an initiative that's part of the National Center for Public Research, a national public policy group based in Washington, D.C., Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, co-author of the recent report, America Is Not Broke, How to Pay for the Crisis While Making the Country More Equitable, Green, and Secure, which, by the way, you can link to at steinershow.org and read it for yourself. Let's go right to the phones. Our guests only have a few more minutes with us. And Lance, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark. This is Clarence.
Clarence, I'm sorry.
Hi, Clarence.
Hi, guys. One thing I wholeheartedly believe has a direct effect on jobs in America is the U.S. Patent Office and how patents operate in this country. If you pay attention to patents and you see products that are developed here in America and then gobbled up by corporations and then sold abroad to companies abroad to manufacture these products and sell them back into the USA, you would see what I'm talking about. And I'll give an example. I've seen patents go across the line where they were patents for taking carbon dioxide out of gas streams coming from manufacturing products. And these patents are sold overseas, and products to ship back into the country at a cost to American manufacturers. And that just seems ludicrous with me. Patents on things such as increasing the efficiency of solar cells. You know, if this were seriously taken a look at and somehow regulated, that if these products, which create jobs, can, if after they've used American money and created right here on this soil, have to be used here, which I don't know how legally you could do that, but it's a factor in job creation, and it's on a massive level that nobody discusses.
So, thank you so much, Clarence. And even though, Sarah, I know you have to go in a minute or two here, but even though you don't talk about patents, you do talk in your study about the kind of taxation you think should be taking place.
Yeah, and I think a related issue is the whole problem of tax havens, because a lot of pharmaceutical companies in particular have subsidiaries in tax havens. They register their patents there and charge royalties to in this jurisdiction with very low or even no tax rates, and that just drains more revenue out of our economy. So that's another one of our proposals, is that we really crack down on this tax haven scam that so many companies use to not pay their fair share of taxes in the U.S. One government study says $100 billion a year is lost in U.S. revenues because of the use of tax havens. So that's just one of many ways that you can read more about in our report, that we could generate revenues more fairly and in ways that can really put us in a stronger position for the future. And I hope that now with the super committee sort of behind us, that we will refocus on more of a bold vision for where we want to go in the country and how do we get there through the kind of tax and other fiscal reforms that we need.
Sarah, I know you have to roll, and I appreciate you being part of the show.
Thanks so much.
And thank you so much. And Deneen, I know you have to leave in a second here, too. Do you want to have a final thought there?
Oh, sure. Just to make a point about Clarence's comments, I think a really big concern about companies manufacturing outside of the U.S. is because energy costs are much cheaper abroad, and so are labor costs. So those are concerns that will prohibit individuals from opening a manufacturing facility here in the United States because of the regulations that are imposed on the fossil fuel industry, which drives up the price of fossil fuels. So, you know, why would you want to open a production facility, a manufacturing facility, when your biggest costs are going to be your energy, and, of course, one of your biggest costs is going to be your labor? But energy, you know, that could be avoided because, we have a wealth of natural resources right here in our country. Again, it's fossil fuels. I do a lot of writing on that issue. And, you know, with reduced energy costs, Americans can have a better standard of living. But when you have high energy prices, people have to pick and choose. Do I pay my utility bill? Do I buy my medicine? You know, and that is something that people should not have to be faced with, not here in our country.
Mm-hmm. Deneen Borelli, I appreciate being part of the show. I'm glad we discovered you and look forward to you coming back.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Excuse me, we go right to the phones, Anthony, see what our listeners are thinking. 410-319-8888. Bernard, you've been holding on a while. You're on the air.
Yes. I hear this all the time from the Republicans about regulations. I would not want to live in this country if we didn't have the regulation. Even with the regulation we have, we still get lemon products. So you lessen those regulations for, say, the car industry or any other major appliance we buy in this country. I just read this morning, I don't know, I was throwing some paper away. It was last week's paper, or it was just yesterday's Sunday Sun, that they have a problem with Samsung refrigerators. When you close the door, the lights didn't stay on. it was a list of numbers and models. Kenmore was one of them. You know, Sears.
Right.
Kenmore is Sears' name, but they don't make the product. Some other manufacturer makes. So, you know, well, if you raise taxes, it'll cut jobs because the manufacturer won't be able to, or company won't be able to hire more people. And that if you, it would cut regulation in this country. But we still get lemon products every day from a toaster that don't work, or baby products, cars, blah, blah. So can you imagine if we cut regulations I mean, down to the bare bone, what would happen? Because you know the manufacturers are not going to be honest or not going to pay fair. They'll just put all kinds of junk out there.
Bernard, thank you.
You know, it's interesting. I found Deneen's argument about regulation very compelling because, Mark, oftentimes, and you know this because you've been in business and you understand that there are times when government overreaches. And you can't overreach when it comes to people's safety. You can't overreach when it comes to our children. But when you talk to small businesses, they say exactly what Sarah says. It's not that they are overregulated by the government. What they want is the government to put money in the pockets of people so that people can come in that store and buy their product. So that when you're buying their product, not when you're over-regulating them, but when you're buying their product, that's when they can hire another employee. They're going to – a lot. I was out at the mall in Towson recently with some friends, and I was talking – always working, Mark – talking to one of the folks there at the Apple store, which stays so busy
jammed all the time.
But, Mark, guess what? First of all, they're not getting paid very well, those –
the employees.
The consultants there. But – they're not – as much as they look busy and overstaffed, they need more people. But guess what? Even a huge corporation like Apple that needs these techies, needs these folks because there is a long line every day of people who are having trouble with the product, they can't hire more people because as much as people are coming in for services and help, they can't – they're not generating the kind of revenue they need locally, and I'm sure it's across the country, to be able to staff the way they need to staff. And imagine that the other stores, even the department stores that always hire seasonally, are going to be understaffed during this holiday season. People just aren't buying the way. People don't have the confidence. They don't have the confidence that they're not going to need this money next month.
The economy is in such bad shape that people are just not going to buy.
And unfortunately, Mark, with Occupy Baltimore, progressives are angry about so many things, and I know you and I have talked about this before, that it appears that the Occupy movement, which is really springing up all over the country, all over the world, I have a feeling that they may take out that frustration, whether we like it or not, on Barack Obama and the Democratic Party in those elections. And not show up. I can't imagine that they would support or vote for any of the Republican candidates that are on the field in the field right now. I think they may sit this election out as a
they
message
might, or the other
to
might,
Obama.
The other part might be that Democratic voters are often energized by fear.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
If they think that the country could take a rightward shift, I think they could just come leaping out. You know, and I think there are many ways you can put people to work. Let's go back to the phones here, but I think there's all kinds of ways you can think about putting people to work. We had a show here last week, 2 weeks ago, about Transform Baltimore.
Transform Baltimore.
And the idea that you could leverage the $66 million a year the city puts out for school construction, you could leverage that out to get a $1 billion bond right away that could start rebuilding the schools in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You need $2.9 billion, they're saying, to do it all, but that would be
a huge start.
And
that's
right. You could put people to work. You could start rebuilding schools. I understand the mayor is reluctant to do that for some reason.
I don't know.
That's what I've heard, but maybe I might be wrong about that.
But, Mark, also the thing that confounds me in a way is this bottle tax, because the projected revenue for the bottle tax is, what, about $11 million?
Is it like somebody, yeah,
a year? That's barely a dent in this school construction or school facility fixing up the schools. That's barely a drop in the bucket. So I'm not sure why we need the tax at this time.
Well, and also there are many people, economists, local and regional economists, who would argue you can't have a simple one jurisdiction have a bottle tax.
Bottle tax.
If it's not statewide or if it's not metropolitan.
At least regionally.
Mm-hmm. Right. If Howard County, Anne Arundel County, Baltimore County all come in and go, okay, we'll do this regional bottle tax. Then it might work. But they do it just locally in Baltimore City. Many people argue for long, it just won't work. Hmm. Should we hear what our listeners think? 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Mac, you're on the air.
How you doing? First of all, I do believe that America is not broke. But one concern that I do have is we really can't trust our elected officials. Because I'm a New Yorker, and I moved down to Baltimore over 12 years ago. And I remember Governor Glendinney talked about putting up a toll booth going into Cecil County, and he said he was going to take that money to build the roads. Now, he's done a remarkable job. I know he's not the governor now, but we've got Governor O'Malley. But only half of the booth torn down going towards Cecil County, all right? And then now that we got half, the tolls have gone up, you know what I'm saying? And then now we get ready to go into this local bottling, and they told us that lottery was supposed to help out the school, and now the bottling is supposed to help out the school. And he had told me, the gentleman just said that the money from the bottling from the Baltimore City is just a microcosmic of the little bit of money that can go to help out the schools. But can we trust our local officials or our officials that we elect into office to keep their word? Because we are not broke. You know, and the more people that work, taxes is being paid, but we're giving our government the opportunity, the Federal Reserve, to make more dollars, and our dollar is being lessened, you know, against the yen and the euro.
Well, I think it's interesting.
You're right about that, Matt.
He's definitely right about that. The question is if the city council, which has to pass the legislation, will force the mayor to put in a directive on where the money goes. Because if they don't, I think Mac is right. I think the money will generate, obviously, the tax revenue. But we have no guarantee that those dollars will go to the school system. For construction or just for rehabilitation. And so I think Councilman Carl Stokes, Bill Henry, and other people who probably will end up voting for the bill may force the mayor's hand in adding language that really does designate where this money goes. Otherwise, just like the lottery and other slots and other things that have taken place, we have no guarantee that those dollars won't go just into the general revenue and be used for other things other than for our children.
But if it doesn't go into the general revenue, that means that they are liars.
Well, yes, because thank you, Mac. I think the issue is that people always use it's for education. It's for our children, which is why we're going to tax bottles, which is why we're going to increase we're going to put more lottery in, which is why we're going to have gambling. It's all going for the children. And that's what that's how they get us.
Mm-hmm.
And you just handed me something here. We'll go back to the phones here. I'm going to get these callers in. Sue, Rob, Michael, coming up to your calls, but about the Grand Prix. And this is amazing.
Mark, I guess every day we learn more about this company, the Baltimore Racing Development Corporation. It's the operator of the Grand Prix here in Baltimore. Now there is a huge $600,000 lien that's been placed against this company. Now, I think that the mayor and
– And this is news that just came out like 3 minutes ago.
No. It came out earlier today.
Oh, I have it here. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, right. It was in the Sun. I think there was an update that just came out.
Update came out 3 minutes ago. Right.
And I think the mayor has a real serious problem on her hand about a long-term relationship with this company. I mean, they are proving that – although, you know what, Mark? I think it was a great – obviously a boon for the city. We got coverage all over the world for the Grand Prix that took place here. Economically and operationally, there's a serious problem about whether or not we can continue this relationship with this company. And they're changing the CEO. I'm not sure if that's the answer. I think when we do the due diligence that the deputy mayor admitted we weren't able to do in building this relationship, not at the level she wanted to do. We weren't able to do it. I think if we do some real due diligence, we're going to find out this is not going to work here in Baltimore. The cost will be too great for the city
and
the taxpayers.
And even local businesses. I mean, the restaurateurs in South Baltimore and literally, they didn't because the firm brought their own caterers in.
That's right. No, hardly any local firms were used.
That which is insane. 410-319-8888. Sue, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for, first of all, lifting up the issue of Transform Baltimore. This is Sue Fothergill,
yes.
Hi, Sue.
Coalition. Hi, guys. And also a partner in Transform Baltimore. And I just want to hit on a few points that you guys raised and bring some clarity from our perspective to the conversation. Specifically, number one, the idea that we leverage existing dollars for the $1 billion, that is the Transform Baltimore goal. We have been pretty forthright in saying that, you know, step one is take what we already have available, what we're already putting towards school construction in this piecemeal project by project sort of way, and looking at the dollars differently and saying, how can we leverage using those dollars much bigger money up front? And that's the $1 billion, and that's the existing dollars. We also, part two of our plan is that we're going to need additional resources to get to the full need of fixing and renovating all our schools, and that's the $2.8 billion. So if you can knock out the first billion with existing revenue, you can't knock out all of it with existing revenue. So we need to raise money, and we certainly are on board with that. And we have been supportive of the bottle tax conversation because it's that part of the conversation, that, well, where do we get the additional revenue to leverage the other half of the bond? So the $10 million would be leveraged for bond dollars. What's frustrating, I think, a little bit is that we're being thrust into a conversation around taxes and one small tax, when what we really need is a plan for the whole $2.8 billion, mm-hmm. agreement and the willingness to take existing dollars and use them flexibly and have them be dependable and allow us to leverage those dollars. And then let's have the conversation as a community. Where else do we want to raise the money to get to the rest of the need? And, you know, a couple of things are sort of moving in different directions and at different paces. And we're trying to be as nimble and on top of it as possible, but we want the whole thing. We think every school in Baltimore should be a great place for kids
right.
to go to, and that great places for teachers to teach. And we need to get there, and we need our political leaders to say, here's the plan, the big plan, and how we're going to do it.
Sue, thank you so much. And we'll come back to that issue. We're going to be staying on top of that one and keeping that in our listeners' ears. Thank you so much. 410-319-8888. Rob in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mark, and hi.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
How are you, gentlemen? Basically, I have a few quick comments to make. My first comment is that, you know, I think that I heard somewhere a week or so ago someone was talking about the Grand Prix, not particularly about the one that took place in Baltimore, but the history of the Grand Prix as far as the economic, I guess, implications for any city that will host such an event like that. And my takeaway from what I heard, from what I was watching, was that the gentleman basically said in so many words that Grand Prix and things of that nature are very rarely actually economically feasible for the whole city, because a lot of times cities fail to recoup. And now with Baltimore having experience, what it just experienced with this Grand Prix or this past summer, which pretty much just another, I guess, another, you know, notch in the whole deal as far as, you know, Grand Prix not working out. But I think this goes back to an earlier issue. I think, to me, it illustrates the fact that there is a lack of transparency with the city government. There is, there does seem to be some type of I don't want to say like some type of a class bias against the general citizenry of this country, of this city. I think that for whatever reason, there's almost a palpable contempt that city government officials, those in the higher echelon offices, they seem to hold a certain contempt with regards to the basic respect and need to know, awareness that people ought to have who live in the city. I think taxpayers need to know exactly where their money's going, whether it be for a general fund or funds to replenish or repair schools and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, I've seen even when Mayor O'Malley was when governor, who at the time then mayor of Baltimore, he would sometimes run roughshod over the Baltimore citizens themselves. I mean, I think years ago he had some situation, and this is completely off topic, when he had pretty much had like different citizens arrested for a stop, search, whatever, and there were like hundreds of people, from what I understand, who got Corbin's whole thing to be arrested
right.
without any charges. So my thing is, there is a lack of respect on behalf of the politicians for the citizens of the city, and this is why things happen. They just don't respect the citizens here.
I think that there has to be some due diligence on the part of us as citizens. And certainly we try our best here on this radio station and in these programs. That's why I'm a huge fan of the Mark Steiner Show. It's because we have to be at the gate and we have to be asking the tough questions. I'm not sure if there's a lack of transparency as much as it is we refuse to hold people accountable. I think that oftentimes that in this Grand Prix process is just an example. Decisions were made. There were hearings, and hardly anyone came. There were a lot of questions.
Right.
The Grand Prix even did a great PR job at reaching out to community organizations, telling them that they were going to get dollars from the Grand Prix. They wanted to bring them into the process. And I think that people were mesmerized by this idea of this race, and no one really asked the tough questions of this mayor and her administration. And I have to say that even on this issue of the tax, too often in this city, even in the administration where I, you know, full disclosure, was a part of, Mark, oftentimes we were able to move processes and agenda items along because citizens did not demand the answers. And we have to. We have to do due diligence, and we have to ask for not just a PR plan and fall for PR rope-a-dope. We have to follow the dollars and where they're going. And I think if that had happened, we would not be – we have yet to scratch the surface at how the hook is on the citizens of Baltimore when it comes to this Grand Prix.
And you're hearing it from Anthony McCarthy, who is a man who's been served on the inside and been a critic and journalist on the outside who knows how the process works. And Anthony, it's always a pleasure to have you.
I love doing this show with you.
I love having you on the show. After January, we're coming back to Mondays again,
right? That's right. Every Monday.
And we're going to get back
yes, sir.
To it. So, and I want to tell you all that the next couple of days, we are going to have incredibly good shows for you, Tuesday and Wednesday. We have recorded for you. I'm going to take off a little bit of time with my family a couple of days.
That's
but
they're
right. All new shows. You're going to really enjoy what you hear. Thursday, we'll have special Thanksgiving broadcasts here from 8 o'clock.
All the way
Wednesday
through.
All the way through. And so you'll enjoy that. And we want you to all have a lovely time with your families. We really do. So, Anthony McCarthy, thank you so much.
You have a great holiday, Mark.
You too, brother. And a reminder, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, 1-800-638-7781. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Harrison. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and find out more information about our guests and their work, please visit us on the web. Say it in English. Please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. Stay tuned now. Marsha Reeves Jews is coming in the studio to take over the mic from 7 to 8 o'clock. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.